I actually grew up in Scottsdale, and you know, it was fun. I enjoyed it. And, you know, we had horses when we were kids, and I used to ride my horse a lot. And you know, when we first moved to Scottsdale, there was hitching posts, so you could actually ride your horse to the store and hitch him up. And
still do that today, don't you?
I don't have a hitching post here at my house in Venice, but they do have hitching posts over at the Polo Club. I'm still riding horses, so that's the good news. But Tucson was actually the last stop. Mark said he was born in 69. Well, 69 was the year we moved to San Francisco. That fall was the year that Prairie started his scholarship at the San Francisco Art Institute, which was the reason we left Arizona, was because of Prairie.
And he was our vegetarian chef.
Right. I was the truck driver and chef at the time, Roadie the Humper. And we moved to Tucson that summer before we left, in like May or something. And we spent that summer in Tucson playing little clubs around town and going up to Mount Lemmon.
At a festival up at Mount Lemmon Rock Festival.
Sabino Canyon. Yeah, Tucson was really cool back then. It was really cool. A lot of, you know, it was pretty much ruled by the U of A kids. I'm sure it probably still is.
Prairie, a lot of college freshmen, when they move in, they might bring with them a house plant or maybe a goldfish, but you actually brought an entire band with you. What was that like for you to start your artistic education with six or seven hairy guys hanging around?
Well, it was just like you say, it was a little chaotic. I mean, we were kind of a little hippie commune slash band and artists. Everybody had, you know, had some sort of artistic or theatrical interest, not just me. I mean, it was my initiation into trying to hold down an artistic career and a musical career at the same time, and it just never stopped.
It was pretty cool. We lived in we didn't live on campus. There wasn't that facility there. We lived in a little house in the Sunset District of San Francisco, about four or five blocks from the beach, in a little two-bedroom house that was pretty much condemned at the time. And we got away with it because the owner lived next door and owned the dry cleaning business. And it was a two-bedroom, and there was six of us living there. And, you know, the place was just paper thin, and the whole neighborhood could hear us rehearsing.
Well, I still get people that remember that.
Yeah.
Remember us.
I talked to a guy the other day. There was a market across the street, a Kayla supermarket. And I talked to a guy at a gig a while back who used to work at the Kayla and would kind of hang outside in front of the market listening to us rehearse. We all lived there together. The six of us, we had basically no income. The band tried to do gigs, but there were pretty few and far between. Prairie supported us, or Prairie's Uncle Marshall. Prairie's Uncle Marshall gave him $150 a month as an allowance to go to art school. And the six of us lived on $150 a month from Uncle Marshall.
Did he have any idea that he was an investor in the band?
Yeah.
Did he?
He was a fan of our music as well.
He was really a cool guy. And we would,
He was from Tucson.
We used to go to the farmer's market on the weekend, and we would buy, you know, a 25-pound bag of brown rice and a 25-pound bag of pinto beans and, you know, government cheese in a can. And all this surplus food that you could get at the farmer's market in San Francisco really cheaply. And, you know, a big bag of carrots. And, you know, I was the cook, and we were all vegetarians at the time, you know, only because we couldn't afford meat. And
we had some ethical reasons as well.
Gosh, I still remember that house so vividly.
Anyway, amazing. I should probably just break off here, and we should discuss that one of our first shows was at the Art Institute. We did,
that's right.
We did a sort of a space opera. You know, we were all dressed up in costumes that we designed, and we airbrushed Michael and I airbrushed everybody with interesting body paint. And I don't know if we were the tubes yet, or if we were still the beans. I can't remember.
I don't think so. Didn't we play in the cafeteria? It was actually another band. We had to change the name. Another band came out with a record called Beans.
Oh, that's right.
A band on United Artists from New Jersey. They published first, so they owned the name. So we had to change it. We changed it to the Tubes.
We picked the name out of a hat. Somebody put mayonnaise on the one that said the Tubes, and our dog picked it out. That's the story I remember.
We ended up with the better name anyway, don't you think?
I do. I think beans was never great. I didn't like beans. Yeah. We tried to make it laser beans, and you know,
for a while it was
Beanazona. For a while, Rogers and Prairie's band changed their name to Arizona at one point.
Well, Fee, let me ask you, was there a key moment that led you from changing your job description from roadie to lead singer, or was it kind of a gradual progression?
What happened was Rogers' bass player was kind of a bonehead, and they tried and tried to find another bass player and never really found anybody suitable. And finally, our manager and Bill's band, the Beans manager, said, well, why don't we just join forces together? Roger and Prairie will join Bill's band, and it'll be a six-man band. And I was kind of left out because Bill's band already had four roadies. They had four guys living at their house calling themselves roadies, so they really didn't need any roadies. But it didn't matter how many guys were in the band at the time in terms of splitting the money because there was no money. And, you know, so it didn't matter if there was a six-man band or a seven-man band, or they didn't care. It didn't matter, as long as we could just pay the rent.
It was also the idea that we needed someone, you know, theatrically to be a front man.
One of the first things I did was we did the Marty Robbins song, El Paso, and I dressed up like a cowboy, and I put a big bag of fake blood under my shirt.
Why did you dress up like a cowboy? Because you were a cowboy.
Because I was a cowboy. I was an Arizona
cowboy.
That's
authentic.
And in the song, he gets shot, right? In the lyrics, he gets shot. And so I would, when the shooting part came, I would slap my chest and squirt blood all over the place and, you know, get blood all over the shirt and all over the stage
about,
and all over the front
Carmen,
row.
How about Carmen Miranda?
And Carmen Miranda. We did a song called Brazil, and I dressed up like Carmen Miranda with fruit on my head and maracas for breasts.
And the rest is history.
That whole thing kind of developed into the legacy of the Tubes, you know, the big theatrical presentation with the dancers and choreography. And we met Kenny Ortega, and Kenny helped us coalesce everything. And we met these girls. We met like a comedy troupe of ex-strippers called Leela and the Snakes, who were doing a comedy show in San Francisco, kind of a vocal comedy kind of a band with comics, and Jane Dornacker was the leader of the band, and we saw them at a little club and thought they were hilarious, and we hired them and said, okay, you can be in the band, and Kenny choreographed all these scenarios, you know, illustrating the songs and the lyrics that we would write, White Punks on Dope and Mondo Bondage and all those early songs. We put together this whole multimedia thing with video and dancing and girls and sets and props. And that kind of whole thing kind of developed into the Tubes, the big theatrical extravaganza. It just got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, we finally got a record deal based on a videotape, not an audio tape, on a video. We sent a video to the record companies, and A&M Records said, wow, you guys are weird. And, you know, and they had nobody weird. They had Carpenters and Captain and Tennille, you know. And so we kind of gave them a little bit of credibility in the weird genre and made five records at A&M.
Do you sort of get tired of people pointing out to you all the time how ahead of your time you were?
Well, I don't think we were so aware of it back then. It's just like that was what we did. You know, Mike was an artist. Prairie was an artist. I was a drama major from Arizona State, and we loved it. We would sit there, you know, we had nothing to do. We'd sit there all day long making our own costumes and making our own props and out of urethane foam, and we would promote our own little show. We would, you know, rent a hall, a little theater, the Village, a little club, and we would make our own posters, and we'd distribute our own posters and do a whole production all ourselves. We just, everything ourselves, which is interesting because it's kind of gone full circle, you know, from those days and then going through the period where now everybody's record company did everything and your publicist and this and that and distributor and manager and account. And now it's kind of come back around to where if you want to make it in the music business, you better be doing it all yourself. You know, make your own record and have your own website and do your own Twitter, Facebook, whatever, because the record companies are pretty much in the dump. When we first did the big Quaalude shoes, the big platforms, the parody of glam rock platform guys, kind of like David Johansen in the New York Dolls. The first shoes were V8 cans. They were, you know, 1 gallon V8 cans that we gaffer taped to the bottom of the shoes.
How dangerous was the Quaalude outfit? Did you ever take any bad falls in that?
Not really. I've never really hurt myself with those shoes. I fell off the stage swinging my chainsaw around once and broke my leg, but I wasn't wearing platforms.
Then you had to put the shoes on, right?
Remember, I didn't. I left, and you guys put the empty shoes in front of the mic stand and played White Punks without me.
I
went to the hospital and had an operation.
Oh, that's right.
You missed the after party that night.
Yeah, really.
What for you is one of the greatest joys about being on stage with the Tubes now in 2011?
I think that it's a lot more fun for me now. It's a lot more fun because there's no pressure. I don't have to worry about my voice because, you know, we usually never do more than three in a row. But in the old days, man, we used to do 7, 8, 10 nights in a row. And I would worry about my voice and you know, worry about losing my voice. And it was just such a struggle to make ends meet and to deal with the record company and to try to compete, you know, get on the charts and get on the radio. And it was such a life. It was so life and death, you know, with us. It was all we had. It was our whole life. And now it's completely different. Now it's fun. Now it's more of a hobby. Everybody has another life, a real life at home. And we don't do all that many shows. We do maybe 35 or 40 shows a year. You know, it's not our only source of income. Everybody else has got something going. So there's no clawing and scraping and struggling to make it anymore.
That was the Tubes lead singer Fee Wayville, joined by drummer Prairie Prince. The Tubes will be taking the stage at the Rialto Theater in downtown Tucson at about 8 o'clock on Friday, August 12th. The Rialto Theater is an underwriter of Arizona Public Media.
Well, you can't have that, but if you're an American citizen, you are entitled to a heated, kidney-shaped pool, a microwave oven, don't watch the food cook, a Dyna Gym, I'll personally demonstrate it in the privacy of your own home, a king-size, titanic, unsinkable Molly Brown waterbed with polybendum, a foolproof plan, and an airtight alibi, real simulated Indian jewelry, a Gucci shoe tree, a year's supply of antibiotics, a personally autographed picture of Randy Mantooth, and Bob Dylan's new unlisted phone number. Beautifully restored Third Reich swizzle stick, Rosemary's Baby, a dream date in knee pads with Paul Williams, a new Matador, a new Mastodon, a Maverick, a Mustang, a Montego, a Merc Montclair, a Mark IV, a Meteor, a Mercedes, an MG, or a Malibu, a Mort Moriarty, a Maserati, a Mack truck, a Mazda, a new Monza, or a moped, a Winnebago. Hell, I heard of Winnebagos. We're giving them away. Or how about a McCullough chainsaw? Gold Kama Sutra coffee pot, or a baby's arm holding an apple.